Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ImpediMed Limited Quarterly Results Investor Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Richard Carreon, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Lexi. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and thank you for joining us today. We're hosting this conference call to discuss our 4C for the financial quarter ending 31 March 2020. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge and thank the clinicians, caregivers, staff, and all those involved in the fight against COVID-19. And although the fight is far from over, the courage these individuals show every day is nothing short of remarkable. On today's call, I'll be referencing the 4C we launched this morning, Australian time. Due to the possibility of communications problem impacting this conference call, I have asked Mike Bassett, our Senior Vice President of Corporate and Strategic Development, to join Tim Cruikshank, our Vice President of Finance and Acting CFO, to join me this morning as well. As always, at the conclusion of my remarks, we'll be taking questions. The financial results for the quarter ending 31 March were as follows. Total revenue for Q3 FY20 was $1.7 million, up 73% from the previous corresponding period of $1 million, and up 14% quarter over quarter. And during this quarter, a number of new records were established. SOZO revenue came in at up 158% from the previous corresponding period, and up 25% quarter over quarter. SOZO SaaS revenue was up $0.9 million, up 94% from the previous quarter over quarter, driven by the strength of the recurring revenue from existing SOZO customers. SOZO annual recurring revenue was $5.5 million, up 98% from the previous corresponding and up 30% quarter over quarter. So the low contract value came in at $3 million, up 8% from the previous corresponding period and up 27% quarter over quarter. Cash on hand as of 31 March 2020 was $6.9 million. An additional $9.3 million has subsequently been received to date in April. Cash receipts from customers for the quarter were $1.3 million. This is below the forecasted range of $1.5 to $1.9 due to the timing of sales in the quarter. Net operating cash outflow of $5.8 million, which is above the range we reported of $4.8 to $5.2, was primarily driven to unrealized negative FX movements, the timing of cash receipts associated with sales in the quarter, and some additional clinical and statistical data analysis expenses. Before I get into our strong operational results, I want to provide an update on COVID-19. Now, these are unprecedented times that are requiring extraordinary measures, and we are doing everything possible to protect our and to support our customers through this period of uncertainty. Shortly before the shelter-in-place order started to occur across the United States, we moved all of our employees to their home offices. We expanded our distribution network to 8. We secured our inventory supply. We began qualifying new vendors for components, so we have multiple sources from which to draw from should this health crisis last longer than currently expected. And finally, we developed virtual training, virtual demonstrations, and virtual installation modules for use by our teams with their customers. Now, we believe we're in a very good position to successfully navigate COVID-19. Our subscription or SaaS model has positioned us well with $0.9 million in revenue generated this quarter, and we exited the quarter with annual recurring revenue of $5.5 million. On March 18th, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services released recommendations calling on hospitals to limit all non-essential planned surgeries and procedures in response to COVID-19. In a recent survey of more than 24 hospital administrators chosen from across the United States, they reported their total surgeries were down 64% and expected that number to drop further to 71% in the coming weeks. endoscopy, ophthalmology, and orthopedic surgeries were down 71%, 67%, and 65% respectively. The least impacted of all procedures were oncology, which is down 28%, ophthalmology down 52%. Now, while we see a decline in overall patient testing in our large institutions, they have not stopped testing. If a patient is brought in for follow-up cancer care, that patient is being run through the normal protocols, which include obtaining an LDEX score. And because SOZO is a connected platform, we're able to track patient testing down to the individual device anywhere in the world. Now, this allows us to see testing begin, but more importantly, we'll know when the testing starts to rebound and we can allocate our resources accordingly. We're now monitoring this data several times a week. Now, let me address the PREVENT trial as clinical studies are being impacted globally, especially those being conducted in hospitals hardest hit by COVID-19. In a number of cases, studies have been halted, canceled, or delayed. In our case, the PREVENT trial is in its final phase, with almost 1,000 patients completing the study requirements. And as you'll recall, we originally set out to enroll 1,100 patients. Based on this information, we do not see risk to our trial or the final outcome. We remain extremely confident LDEX will reach statistical significance. As I stated earlier, we had strong operational results for the quarter. We sold 64 devices this quarter. 40 of these devices were sold to existing customers to expand their current programs. Notable among these sales were additional units to the University of Kansas Cancer Center and Sharp Healthcare. Now, if you'll recall, both of these were original centers of excellence when we launched the product just 2 short years ago. We had a 100% renewal of 11 agreements that were ending this quarter, and our churn rate continues to be of 1%. We also announced a new software release that includes HeartFit. And the new software also includes an assessment for patients with end-stage renal disease as well as usability and data management improvements. This quarter, we signed 2 of the largest contracts in the company's history. First, with Baylor Scott & White, adding 20 SOZO units to their lymphedema prevention program after the release of our iOS software. Baylor Scott & White Rehab now has a total of 25 units under their program, with expectation of continued expansion across their 100-site network. The second was our initial sale of 16 SOZO devices under a national purchasing agreement with McKesson's U.S. Oncology Network. The national purchasing agreement allows 1,200 physicians across 470 cancer treatment locations access to our technology. These physicians treat over 1 million cancer patients annually. Dr. Michael Fedman, the president of the U.S. Oncology Network, stated, "Staying on the leading edge of technology is part of our commitment to provide the best care for our patients. With SOZO, we will enhance our survivorship program by offering lymphedema as part of our comprehensive cancer care. This adds tremendous value to our patients as well as the clinicians in our network." Both of these contracts have been in the works for more than 12 months, and we expect to see further expansion of SOZO in their facilities in the coming quarters as they drive to make SOZO care. Lexi, these conclude my remarks. Can we please open the lines up for questions?
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press *2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Shane Storey with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. Can you hear me?
You can, Shane.
Great. Rick, maybe if I can begin with the quarterly results today. Just look, having a look at those new contracts totaling $3 million, would I be right in assuming that most of the new business that's coming in is on three-year sort of term contracts?
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay, yeah. And then if I look at the install base, which is now sort of 540, I'm interested to get any information you can share with us or sort of observations around the take-up of modules, say, outside the unilateral lymphedema. I guess what I'm sort of angling to try and understand is, like, when we try to model out the SaaS component in terms of an average revenue per unit, say, like, I'm just interested in what that kind of number is averaging, say, in US dollars per month right now, sort of across the install base as an average number, just as a bit of an estimate.
I just want to make sure I understand your question, Shane. What you're looking for is any additional modules outside lymphedema that people have taken up with their devices. Is that correct?
Yeah, that'd be helpful, because we sort of know what the pricing is around the unilateral lymphedema part of it, but just seeing that, you know, protein malnutrition and other sorts of indications have sort of become available on other modules, just interested to see whether that's had an impact in terms of the average revenue.
I would say that it has marginal impact at this point. We really have not put an effort into those other indications. We were waiting for two things. One, iOS, which obviously we just released, and the advent of our new software, which would include the heart failure and for outside the U.S. for renal failure. So I would say it would be negligible at this point, but I can tell you there's been a lot of interest in the expansion of those other indications as they start to establish their program. So I think it's something we should report in the future, but I would tell you right now it would be a measurable part of the business.
Okay. And then, look, I guess two more questions for me. Look, I guess when we look at the U.S. Oncology Network news this quarter, see you've placed 16 units into that network. But conscious that there's sort of 470-odd clinics there, I mean, are we seeing now like a pilot phase that would then sort of segue into a more structured rollout across that network? I'm sort of just interested to know what we can expect from that relationship and how it sort of comes into the numbers, say, over the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, I would say that the power of the quote by the president of U.S. Oncology, I think, will give you an indication of their commitment. And also, it is very rare. I mean, what we were told when we went out and met with them is that very few vendors that they deal with, manufacturers, ever get a McKesson contract across all 470 of their cancer centers. Typically, they'll negotiate with small groups or as one-off. And I can tell you that Tim has been working diligently with their corporate staff to get a contract. So I would say this is not a pilot program. This is the beginning of what we see, an expansion. They have been looking at our technology for quite some time. They have been trialing it for quite some time. And we were able to sign this contract at the end of the quarter, and we're confident that once COVID-19 is behind us, that we'll start to see an expansion of these programs throughout the entire system.
Okay, thanks. Look, my last question, Rick, just relates to, I guess you gave us a little bit of an update and some comfort, I guess, around the COVID impact on Prevent, but I'm wondering what impact, if any, it's had or is having on your clinical trials of activities in heart failure. Just conscious that you released those software updates just yesterday, and whether COVID has sort of introduced any changes to your strategy on heart failure and commercialization, which I understand was kind of scheduled, you know, towards the end of the year.
The impact has been minimal, and the reason it's been minimal, as you know, COVID-19, the major outbreak has been on our East Coast. So if you look at New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, on the Eastern Seaboard, is really where the biggest outbreak has been and where the tightest lockdown has been. In the state of California, we've been under lockdown now for just under 30 days, and I can tell you they continue to enroll patients out here because the order of magnitude difference between California and New York is significant. They're counting the passing of patients to COVID-19, and, you know, well over 10,000 now, and we haven't reached 1,000. So the lockdown isn't as difficult, and the hospitals at this point in California are not in a capacity issue. So though we're starting to see an increase, our top of their apex, as they're calling it, is now behind us, and or we're about to enter the next couple of days, but it will never reach the levels at this point of New York. So our trials are on the West Coast. They are putting a halt to it in the hospitals. They're not going to be enrolling any new patients outside of the Scripps location, because the Scripps location has a separate cardiovascular center that is not connected to the hospital. And again, they continue to enroll. And I talked to one of the enrolling physicians just earlier this week. And so they'll give several more. And if they start to come to an issue that they don't think they can continue to follow on those patients, then they'll stop. Now, the other good news is, as you know, these are for 45 days, and we're placing the devices in the patient's homes. So it's much, much more different than a trial that is extended for years or require office visits or hospital visits on a routine basis. So we're not expecting to see an impact on the heart failure trial. And also recall that we've got a number of abstracts and a paper that has been submitted. So COVID-19 is slowing, I would say, the review of the paper. But once we get the paper out from the Scripps clinicians, I think you'll see a way to risk stratify these patients, and that, therefore that's when we've got the software ready for that when it comes out that shows how to risk stratify your heart failure population.
Hey, thanks, Tim and Peter. That's all I had. Cheers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Sally Watson with Oblique Logic. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. You can hear me okay, I'm assuming?
You can, Sally.
Cool. My question relates to the heart failure application. I'm just trying to get a feel for the longer-term timing of how you see this market unfolding. You've got the trials in play now, and I'm thinking it's kind of a 6 month activity by the time papers get out and you start talking to people. And I'm also trying to understand the plan in terms of how you're going to be marketing that, given that you, the cancer community that you're working in now, you have very good profile, but it's going to probably not really carry over much to the heart patient community and the medical associated community.
I will tell you this, the overlap for cancer and heart failure is more significant than I think I've ever appreciated. About 30% of all heart failure, 30% of all cancer survivors are highly susceptible to heart failure. In fact, if you take a look at the breast cancer population, you have a greater chance of developing heart failure than dying of a reoccurrence of your breast cancer just due to the toxicity of the cardiotoxicity of the radiation and chemotherapy. So We're starting to talk to more and more cardio-oncologists. So there is strong overlap there. I will also tell you, from a heart failure standpoint, it is the single biggest impact to the healthcare system. And so there's a lot of interest, and we continue to have inquiries into our technology by cardiologists and large centers wanting to take a look at, have a demo of our device, and then want to see how Scripps would recommend risk stratifying those patients. So I think once we have a chance to show that paper, once we have a chance to demonstrate how simple, how easy this technology can be used, I think what you'll see in the beginning is it'll be used as a risk stratification tool in the cardiologists, in the cardiovascular departments, and then we'll see that move out to the home environment as they get used to looking at these patients and risk stratifying them.
Okay. And are you looking at any I suppose, grant programs that might be run by BARDA or an organisation like that, like the Veterans Medical Organisation, to try and leverage some of that as an opportunity?
Yes, I will tell you that the VA in the United States, or the Veterans Administration in the U.S., is the largest hospital system. Obviously, they have a huge patient population of individuals, majority of them over 60, 65, which are high risk for developing heart failure, where the majority of it takes place. So that is an area that we're currently exploring. And that we will continue to explore, because that would be one of the quickest ways to get into the heart failure market. There's a company that was acquired by Medtronic called CardioCom. That's where they got their footprint. That's where they saw the growth of their product, and that's where they established themselves.
Okay, thanks for that. That's all I have.
Okay, Sally, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up question from Shane Storey with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. A rare follow-up question. But hey, it's just if you could please remind us around whether SOZA has an indication in renal. I saw that the software update came out yesterday, but I can't recall for the life of me what the FDA status is around that indication. Thanks.
So we have a CE mark for renal failure, and we do not have an FDA clearance yet for it in the United States. However, you could use it under an IRB, or you could use straight fluid analysis as an off-label. So we are currently working with the FDA, and they have encouraged us to work with them to provide a way for objectively measuring fluid, excess fluid for dialysis patients. So that's something that we are currently working on, and part of our capital raise was based on the fact that this is an area that we wanted to move into.
Thanks. That's great. Cheers. Bye. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Ian Hyde, an investor. Please go ahead.
Good morning and good evening. Thanks for taking my call. If you can provide some clarification just around, if possible, just with COVID, I know it's very much a fluid situation, but with the ability to install and market and sales of devices and contracts, has any of that been impacted significantly with you being able to get access to everywhere you want to get to with hospitals, or most of that has been closed down, so sales are actually going to be impacted in the short term, or just some clarification around with your online training and so on, if that can be also used for online installations possibly, and from there.
COVID-19 is impacting our business. I want to make sure that I'm perfectly clear on that, Ian. Our ability to get into hospitals, for instance, in New York, nobody can get into a hospital who is a vendor, a manufacturer, who is not reporting a critical care case. I can tell you that we've got a number of appointments that we have done virtually. To some of the physicians there, they have asked us to contact them in the next 30 days or 30 days from now, after they see this, their apex that starts to subside, and they'd be willing to have another discussion. In California, we've not had an issue from a standpoint of holding virtual calls. I can tell you, there's not a major hospital in the U.S. today that will accept a sales rep who's not covering a case. And so the good news is all of these hospitals are accepting and have moved a lot of our appointments into virtual cases. So we're doing them virtually. And then we're also doing the demos. In several cases, we actually have shipped in our device and showed the staff how to set it up virtually. We show them the demo. They can either do it themselves, or we do one virtually, and then we're doing our training and installations that same way as well. So we're quickly moving to a different model during this time period. But I want to make sure that you understand is that it's difficult for anybody to get into a major account today face to face.
Okay, so thanks for that. To clarify then, so there is an impact on number of sales that could be made, but some are still continuing, and it's really a state-by-state or region-by-region situation?
Yes, that would be a good way to put it. That would be correct, yes.
Okay, thank you. With the new modules for CHF and ESRD, you've touched on there's no approval from the FDA for the ESRD yet, but with the CHF, there is approval with the FDA, and there's also another approval, which I can't remember the condition or the clarification of that, which is still pending. Based upon the activity or the interest you've had when you released the initial data from the CHF trial, are hospitals actively starting to engage those for that, say, such as like Scripps, or hospitals that have been in the CHF trial that understand how it works, and now you've got the module, so that can kick off, even though in a limited fashion?
I will tell you this. Since we've released the heart failure initial data, there has been a lot of inquiries into the company. What they're waiting for is information on how they would use that data. We give them data. Up until we were just released the software package, we were giving them excess fluid in a heart failure patient. But the new software actually has its own separate heart failure module that gives them much more insight into a heart failure patient. I think coupled that new software package that was instrumentally designed by the clinicians at Scripps is going to be the release of their data on how to risk stratify the patient population. And once we have that, I think we'll have a total package to start going out and seeing cardiologists and heart failure specialists in the marketplace. But I can tell you there has been a significant uptick in inquiries into our technology specifically designed for the heart failure population.
Thank you. And just
with
that
line, a lot of interest.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I apologize. No, sorry. And with that last approval that's been pending for some time with the FDA for the further testing condition for CHF, any progress there? Because initially we had hoped that would be given by the end of December, but we're now end of April.
Yes, you're talking about the contraindications for implantable defibrillators and pacing devices. We have the data in front of the FDA, and we're awaiting their direction on the information we've provided to them. We continue to do our testing, and we're continuing to collect data in anticipation of any questions they may have. But yes, it's taken much, much longer than we had expected. And I would say with the COVID-19, I would think everything at the FDA is slowing down.
Sure. And lastly, the elephant in the room is there any indication, because it's now pretty much 4 months since the PREVENT and meta-analysis have been subject to or submitted for peer review, is there any indication as to when they might be released, and is there any indication that what's happening now is slowing down the peer review process in some way?
Well, I can say the peer review process is slowing down. Obviously, if you're affected in New York, every physician, every clinician is being called up. Even the retired ones are being asked to come in now to cover shifts. So if you're a reviewer in that market, obviously that's not a priority for you. But I can tell you that the 2-year PREVENT trial is in its final editorial review, so we would expect that out. I don't have a recent update on the meta-analysis, but being a meta-analysis, it's a much more detailed review because it's a statistical analysis, so getting clinicians with a strong statistical background. There's a number of them, but they probably get pulled into a number of meta-analysis. But I would say that there may be a slowdown on both of those because of COVID-19, but I would expect that they would be coming out. At this point, I would say based on where I see the editorial review process. It's probably going to be the two-year data before the meta-analysis comes out.
Okay, thank you. And lastly, thanks and congratulations to the boards and everyone on getting these large contracts, which hopefully will keep everything going forward as we all want. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Ian.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. We'll pause briefly to allow more questions to enter the queue. Your next question comes from Rajiv De Silva with Salter Brothers. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Could you just address anything you guys are doing on the cost side in terms of staff costs, rent costs, et cetera? Most of the companies have taken quite drastic steps on this side, and can I know what you guys are doing? Thanks.
Certainly, Tim. Do you want to take that, and then I'll let Tim address it as well.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for the question, Rajiv. So we announced in our prospectus on the 2nd of April some of those measures that we're taking. So you see in there we've got executive and board temporary reductions to their salaries that will be in place through the extent of the impact of COVID-19. In addition to some further stage reductions if we continue to see any, you know, midterm impacts on the company in relation to COVID-19. So we've already begun taking those, as well as just a disciplined approach to our cost savings. In addition, we're looking at programs throughout the globe in relation to forgivable loans and other items that we can leverage for our business. So we're looking at all the different avenues of that and how to, you know, weather through the COVID-19 situation.
Yeah, what's your run rate cost base now? So annualized cost base now, what would it be?
So we haven't given that information out to the market, but if you see in this past quarter, we had $3.6 million in staff costs on our cash flow statement. So we would go down from that, you know, as you look out over the course of the next few quarters.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Carrion for closing remarks.
Okay, Lexi, thank you very much. Everyone, thank you very much for your time today. Stay safe. Thank you, Lexi.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.